many, many reasons, have been a disaster. A great deal of private money is being invested in adult stem cell research, and almost no private money in embryonic stem cell research. And yet the Democrats keep yelling and screaming and talking about this, and of course they want, of course, to destroy our economy by selling people the idea that we have global warming and we want to come up with alternative forms of energy like windmills and solar energy, which are so cost inefficient. Well, under any circumstances, I believe that what we saw yesterday in the election was a vote against George Bush, and a very well-deserved vote against a president who is certainly talks about being a Christian, and yet he's appointed more homosexuals to key positions than Bill Clinton ever possibly could have thought of. George Bush certainly has done nothing to advance the pro-life agenda. He could have. He had the opportunity to. Absolutely refused to. All they had to do was, of course, pass legislation outlawing abortion or partial birth abortion and put a rider on so the courts couldn't intervene. And when they passed the partial birth abortion legislation, they knew full well the courts were going to intervene, and what they were doing was simply an exercise in futility, and they did it because it's all show business. It's symbolism over substance. It's rhetoric over reality. It's this game that they play to make the people think that they're really doing something when they really aren't. But I think that the major reason people voted as they did was because they didn't want this war. The American people didn't want the Vietnam War, and that's, of course, why they elected Richard Nixon in 1968, because he promised to stop the war, but Richard Nixon lied. He kept that war going for another 4 years, so in 1972 he could say, I have a plan to end the war. And, of course, in 1973, the end of the war with exactly the same program that they could have ended it back in 1968. Only they did everything to block any of the war, to extend the war, and most of the boys who died in Vietnam died after they had peace negotiations in 68, which Richard Nixon blocked. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're simply talking about why we had the elections results we did, and of course our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, it's open lines, and we welcome your calls. Here on the Central Coast of California, 464-8295, 464-8295, and we're talking about the election results yesterday and why they went the way they did. And I think most people are sick at heart about what's happening in Iraq, and certainly the loss of American boys and so many of our boys being crippled, and of those who do come home intact, at least physically. Within 3 months, about a third of them are ill, and I believe that there's some sort of, whether it's related to depleted uranium or whether it's related to some sort of macabre experiments they did on the boys we sent over there. This, in the second Gulf War, like we did in the first Gulf War, I don't know what it is, but I know that 80,000, over 80,000 of the boys who fought in the first Gulf War are dead. Young, healthy young men. And now they're dead. Where do we get those figures? We'll be glad to send them to you. They come from the Veterans Administration, where they point out that there were 695,000 Americans who fought in the war and then presumed living still, and there were actually more than 80,000 that were presumed already to be dead. From the first Gulf War, and this, of course, does not happen normally. This is part of some sort of a macabre experiment, but then they're doing that all the time. But they can't let the American people know that. Well, under any circumstances, I think most people were sickened at the increasing violence over there, and of course the suffering of the Iraqi people, and then the Johns Hopkins report that estimated that probably somewhere in the realm of 600,000 more Iraqis had died than should have died and would have died if we had not intervened over there. And the figures might be somewhere between 300,000 or 400,000 and 900,000. They just pick sort of an intermediate figure. But I think most Americans are disturbed by what's going over in Iraq, and of course the justification for going into the war. We went into the war with Afghanistan because we were going to get Osama bin Laden dead or alive. You remember that? The president promises we're going to get Osama bin Laden dead or alive. They never intended to get Osama bin Laden. If any of you would like the article, we have on October 7th, 2001, Washington Times. We could send you a copy of it, where high government officials said, we're not going to try to get Osama bin Laden. Oh, our policy is Osama bin Laden last, not first. If we got Osama bin Laden, how would we justify continuing this war? And ladies and gentlemen, that's what it was all about, to justify continuing the war. Well, this is Arthur Stan, and we were simply talking about what the vote yesterday really meant, and I feel that this was a vote against the current administration. It was not a vote against the policies of the Republican Party, although, as a lifelong Republican, I'm ashamed of the attitude that these people have taken, and I will have to admit that I did not vote a Republican ticket this time. I voted for a few Republicans, but mostly I voted for people who I thought would do a better job, or simply a protest vote. And, of course, I voted against all of these increased government programs that they had here in California being pushed by the Republican governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Big spending programs of some $40 billion he wanted to borrow will have to be paid back. That will cost $80 billion. But as long as you can spend money and it doesn't cost you anything, why, then, of course, you leave some future generations to have to worry about where the money's coming from to pay it back. But I think most people in America, I think the vast majority of people in America who voted for the Democratic candidates across America, and apparently some 24 to 28 seats were lost to the Democrats in the House of Representatives, and it sounds like why it may well be that the Senate will be lost to the Democrats. And this was a vote against the war. It was a vote against a president who said, oh, I promise we're going to get Osama bin Laden dead or alive. That's why we're going into Afghanistan. And we never intended to get Osama bin Laden. If you haven't read the book, we carried it. It's called Crude Politics by Paul Sperry, who interviewed the people from Special Forces who were sent over to Afghanistan. And they wanted to go after Osama bin Laden, but we wouldn't let them. We sent a group of Afghan mercenaries, many of whom supported Osama bin Laden, and we surrounded him on two or three sides and let him escape to the fourth side. And you have to understand that if we'd gotten Osama bin Laden at that time, how would we have justified continuing the war in Afghanistan and, of course, getting the poppy fields growing again? Remember, under the wicked Taliban, there weren't any top poppy fields. We'd pretty well done away with the opium trade from Afghanistan. But once the Americans got there, once we controlled Afghanistan, the poppy fields were blooming again. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I ask you to think intelligently. Why would we destroy the people who'd stopped the heroin trade and then encourage the people who were, you know, promoting the heroin trade unless maybe Gary Webb, the Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter from the San Jose Mercury, who had written several years ago about how the CIA was working with the drug smugglers and was actually responsible for helping them bring drugs into this country, and that the CIA was involved in the drug market and the drug industry. And then, of course, pressure was put on the San Jose Mercury to fire Gary Webb, and he was hounded after that, and eventually he committed suicide by shooting himself in the head twice to make sure he was dead. This is really what happens. And is it possible that the CIA is involved with the massive drug market, the massive drug marketing operation out of Afghanistan today? Did we get rid of the Taliban because it stopped the heroin trade, and there are those within the dark side of the Central Intelligence Agency or the other intelligence agencies? We never know which ones they are, because we have at least 14 intelligence agencies we know of, and they're listed in Christian Eleanor's Hill testimony before the Joint Intelligence Committee inquiry back in 2000. Actually, she testified on the 18th of September 2002 and pointed out we have at least 14 intelligence agencies we know of, and many of them, of course, are spying on the American people today and collecting dossiers on the American people today through DARPA and through the TIPS program. And of course, Congress said that we had to stop this monitoring of the American people, but it didn't stop because the military is collecting dossiers on people all across America today in the name of fighting the wicked Osama bin Laden, who's hiding in a cage over in Pakistan. And if we don't collect dossiers on American citizens and tap every telephone call and listen to every email and read every fax, and it's all done by of course, computers, and then, of course, human intelligence comes in. It's done through the NSA, the National Security Agency. In the past, it was done by the British, and all the information was turned over to the United States because it would be dishonest. It would be against the law for the American NSA to do that. So we get the British to monitor the Americans, and then the NSA monitors the British. That's how the game is played. And it's all a game. We cannot let the American people know what's really going on. Well, I really believe that what we saw in the election was certainly total disillusionment with a president that got us into the war in Afghanistan, allowed Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda to escape, and then continued to take over control of Afghanistan. What's that escape? Why were we still fighting in Afghanistan? Why, very, very simply, because we never went in to get Osama bin Laden. And if you think we went there to get the Taliban, remember, well, you can read President Bush's speech that he gave on the 20th of September, 2001. You could pull it down off the Internet. I would just go to whitehouse.gov. A speech, 20th of September, 2001, just 9 days after the 9/11 attack, when President Bush announced that we were the largest source of humanitarian aid for Afghanistan, and since, of course, Afghanistan was controlled by the Taliban, we were the largest source of humanitarian aid for the Taliban that were hosting and protecting the wicked Osama bin Laden. What's wrong with this picture? Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And then don't forget, we went into Iraq because Saddam Hussein was developing weapons of mass destruction that threatened America. That's why, and he was going to give them to the terrorists or attack America. That's why we had to go in there, isn't it? And then we had to go in, and once we had conquered, Iraq, why immediately disbanded the military and the police force and the civil service, and we refuse steadfastly to retrain an Iraqi army and an adequate police force. We allowed the private militias, to continue to operate there, and then we wonder why we have chaos. Well, let's go to Steve, who's calling from Richland, Washington, and get his thoughts. And hi, Steve. How are you doing?
Hey, Stan. Always a pleasure to hear you.
Oh, hey. It's good to hear from you. I recognize. I know which Steve this is. How have you been?
I've been real good. Keeping real busy, work, school, kids, all that stuff.
Okay, I bet the kids are growing up fast, aren't they?
Like little weeds.
Okay, fine. Well, you give them all a hug for me.
I will.
Anyway, yeah. Did you have a question or comment for us tonight?
I had a couple of comments. You're talking about the CIA made me recall that I heard today the new appointee to replace Rumsfeld as a ex-director of the CIA.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? His name is Robert Gates. He's also a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. There are only about 4,000 members of the CFR, and all the important positions in government are held by this group. Of course, this is under the control of David Rockefeller, who admits to being an internationalist who has no loyalty to America, but to this internationalist dream. And if you haven't read his memoirs, you really need to. Go ahead.
Bush certainly seems to keep those guys pretty close to his there.
He sure does.
My other comment was on the election in general. I've been saying for a couple of years the Republicans were going to lose, and I think Americans, even more so than the war, are just set up with these neoconservatives and their big government, big spending. They just act like a bunch of liberals, and I'm glad they got a little kick in the teeth. Maybe it'll get some new blood in there.
Well, the thing that really disturbs me, Steve, is I'm afraid that this is going to discredit the Republican Party. The Republican concept of limiting government, and of course, what we've really done, what the people who voted for the Democratic Party really did was vote for the Democratic agenda. I believe in the Republican agenda. I just believe that George Bush and the men who surrounded him did not believe in the Republican agenda and set out to destroy it, and they sure did a good job. And then, of course, I think the people voted against the war, and I certainly agree with that. But I think the biggest thing is that George Bush is discrediting Christianity, not only in America, but throughout the world. And when people, you know, hear a president gets up and says, we do not allow torture, and then puts through the Military Commission Act, which authorizes torture, when he says, you know, basically, I'm against amnesty, I just want people who are here illegally to be able to stay here and become citizens. What he says, you know, I think English should be the official language of the United States. But, of course, you go to his website, all of his speeches are available in Spanish. A president who says, I'm going to get Osama bin Laden dead or alive, and never has the intention to do it. I think he discredits the Lord that you and I both worship.
Well, he also calls himself a Christian in one breath and then goes and does overseas speeches that says that Jews and Muslims and Christians all pray to the same God.
That's just textbook Freemasonry. I think that he's praying to a different God than I do, because I don't pray to the same God the Muslims do. Maybe he does, but I sure don't.
I think he just prays to his Blue Lodge and hangs out with his Yale Skulls and Bones boys. Well, I'll keep listening to you on the air, Stan.
Hey, God, it's good to hear from you, Steve. Thanks so much for calling. Okay, fine. Well, we've got Dave on here from Illinois. And again, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, Dave. How are you doing?
Good evening, Doctor.
Are you getting some storms back there in Illinois?
Not here in Central Illinois yet, no.
Okay.
Not yet.
Okay.
I didn't know they were coming.
Okay.
Thanks for the heads up.
Okay, well, do you have a question or comment?
Well, a couple of both. First of all, is the music coming?
That's all right. You go right ahead.
Okay. I agree that this is a referendum against the war, against the borders, and against Bush and the Congress in general. But I want your prediction, Dr. Stan. Do you think there's any chance that we're going to get out of Iraq soon?
Nope. Absolutely.
You don't think so?
Nope.
Hmm. I thought maybe we would. I was hopeful that would happen.
Well, I would hope it would happen, too, you know. I hope that we'd get out of Vietnam, you know, when they got Richard Nixon in there. They're all controlled by the same people. You know, Henry Kissinger was the man who was directing the Vietnam War, and who's George Bush going to now? Oh, he's going to Henry Kissinger. So you got the same people in the same positions doing the same things over and over and over again. Hang on.
Yeah.
Okay, Dave, go ahead.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, I just think it's I guess it's a bigger landslide than some people thought. A lot of people thought the Senate would remain in the Republican hands. It looks like it's going to the Democrats, too. Well, I'm a lifelong Republican, Stan, but like you, I think both parties have totally sold us out. And I personally vote for the Green Party wherever I could. I vote for a couple of Republicans. I vote for a couple of Democrats locally because, you know, local positions aren't really political. They're just control and, you know, things about running, like running a business. But when it comes to the actual politicians, I voted Green Party every chance I could. And that's all we had here in my election, no other third party.
Don't you have a Constitution Party?
Yeah, I did vote for a couple of those. I did.
All right. Basically, at least they support the Constitution.
Exactly.
And the only way we have of limiting big government is to get back to the Constitution. I just wish they had better leadership. I mean, I think that they do not have the money. They do not have the people who can work at it full time, and that's what you really need. You need a gigantic staff organizing, educating. But as you know, we of course put on people from the Institute of the Constitution every month here on all of our different stations to try to get people to understand our Constitution and realize that this is the foundation of our freedom, that and the belief in God.
Exactly. Now tonight on TV they interviewed Nancy Pelosi, who I guess is going to be the Speaker of the House now, so, you know, female.
Right.
But she is telling, I think, Katie Couric that, and I dislike par of the course. She's talking about all what she's going to do for education, you know. And Ms. Pelosi, that's not the federal government's job. So you're right. There's no difference, Dan. No difference at all.
But
they're all the same basic socialist or even communist party. There's no difference between them.
But I think what the American people didn't understand is the No Child Left Behind legislation that George Bush enacted was not his idea. That was Ted Kennedy's bill. Ted's been trying to get that through, you know, for 20 years. He couldn't get it through. His good friend George Bush got it through. It was a scam. The federal government has no business at all being involved in education, if you believe in, of course, the Constitution. In fact, one of the big major planks that Ronald Reagan ran on in 1980 was his promise to the American people that he would do away with the Department of Education. He never once tried to do it. And in fact, he expanded its power and program, to dumb down our people and, of course, expand federal interference in the education of our children. So, Nancy Pelosi, I'm sure, is going to discontinue the same program that George Bush put in place. The federal government has no business being involved in education, period.
Exactly. Well, the way I see it, the problem with this country right now, in my estimation, is that this country is a population who buys into this line. You know, the modern politician, his mantra is simply, his battle cry, his campaign drive simply is, look what I'm going to do for you with your neighbor's money, taxpayer's money. That's what they all say. And no one, people forget it's taxpayer's money these guys mess with. So, and they all do that. Not one of them. You know, I would vote for a second for any candidate who would just say, folks, I'll follow the Constitution. I've never heard that once from any of them.
Well,
there
are a few of them out there. The people like Ron Paul and there are
a couple
of congressmen who absolutely refuse to bring home the bacon, as it were, to bring home the pork, because they will not compromise so they can get money for their congressional district by voting for unconstitutional legislation somebody else is putting forward to get money for their constituents. And I think what we need is for people to understand what we need is people who believe in the Constitution. That's a lot better than getting federal funds to do something in our community. First of all, they're probably poorly spent. And hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. This is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And of course, we were just discussing with Dave from Illinois the meaning of the elections. And of course, Dave was saying that he feels that a lot of people are very upset, about all the pork. He also says that most congressmen are interested in getting pork, getting money brought into their congressional district to spend there, and that makes them look good. Oh, we want to put in a swimming pool. We'll all get some of the money from someplace, and of course I'm going to have to make all sorts of concessions, but I'll get a couple hundred thousand dollars so we can have a swimming pool in Santa Cruz, and then everybody's going to like me, and maybe they'll call that the Stan Monte swimming pool or the Norman Mineta Airport or whatever it would be. But it's about time people understood the Constitution. The whole idea of our Constitution was to prevent this sort of thing, to prevent the people from selling themselves into slavery, and that's just what we're doing.
Well, Dr. Stan, Ron Paul, he's my hero. I wish he's our congressman. But we have Ray LaHood, who I don't like at all. In fact, I left that blank. I wanted to write in Donald Duck, but you can't do it in the computer, so I wanted to say Donald Duck as a protest vote. But
what you can do, Dave, of course, is start letting people understand about the Constitution. Understand that you have a corrupt congressman, and who knows, maybe you could even vote him out in the primary. Is he Republican or Democrat?
He's Republican.
Okay.
In name only, in my opinion.
Right. They call those rhinos. They're Republican in name only. R-I-N-O.
Oh, yeah. Well, I like Ron Paul. To me, he's about the only member of Congress I really respect. He's the only one I really respect. Because he votes right every time, He's a true patriot.
He really is. And, of course, you know what they call him in Congress?
Dr. No.
Dr. No, because, of course, he gets up and the vote will be, 450 to 1, and he's always the one who votes no. Because if it isn't constitutional, he won't vote for it. There are a few others, of course, who understand what's going on and do have the courage to do the right thing, but they're in a very much of a minority. And they're in a minority because the American people have had it so good for so long they've forgotten that you cannot have freedom when you have an all-powerful government. And our founding fathers recognized that limited government, limited federal government and liberty were synonymous, and that total federal government and tyranny were synonymous. But they're going to find out very soon. I think we're moving rapidly towards a dictatorship in what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave.
Well, Doctor, I think we're heading to recession, maybe depression. I think we have a very tough time in this country, and I don't think the American people are ready for it.
I don't think so either, but of course, if you look at it from a spiritual point of view, David, the only thing that is ever going to get the attention of the American people and jar them out of their complacency and affluence is to lose everything they have. And I will tell you that I was stationed in Germany after the Second World War, and I saw the cities in rubble, and I saw the vacant looks on the faces of many of the German people just beginning to recover from the horror that they'd experienced. I hate to think of it, but we may need something like that, and if God is just, he is going to bring judgment on America.
Oh, yeah. Well, thanks for your time, Doctor.
God bless, and thanks very much, Dave. Okay, I get our telephone number at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, of course, you know, it's very interesting. Representative Charles Rangel is talking about impeaching the president, but... and, of course, he is a leading Democrat, but Nancy Pelosi says, no way, we're not going to do anything like that. Why? Because, of course, they're all cut from the same bolt of cloth. I mean, the idea of going after Bill Clinton by the Republicans, I mean, they didn't go after Bill Clinton for anything, the serious crimes that he'd committed against our country. There were over 50 people who had died violent deaths because they'd been opposed to Bill Clinton and died in one way or the other. In fact, when the young lady he was having the affair with, Monica Lewinsky, had taken a list of all those people who died mysteriously and put it on the chair where Linda Tripp sat. Linda was, of course, bringing out some of the information about Bill Clinton. And she said, look at all these people who have died. Do you really want to testify against Bill Clinton? Well, Linda Tripp did at a tremendous expense, but it didn't do any good because it was all a slam dunk. They were going to talk about Monica Lewinsky and a titillating episode, which I think myself was a setup. I mean, how many women are going to keep a stained dress around? Most women, if they had a stained dress, would get it cleaned. But nobody ever asked why she kept that dress around. I think most of these things are decided long ahead of time, and somebody had put her up to this, and Bill wasn't really smart enough to realize what it was all about. But it was a great deal of entertainment, and it took our mind off the really important issues. And that's one of the big problems we have. They did not go after Bill Clinton for transferring the most sensitive missile technology secrets and missile guidance secrets to the communist Chinese. Why didn't they go after that or all the people who died mysteriously? Well, this is Arthur Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and this is Open Line Wednesday. And if you'd like to get onto the program, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, and we'll talk about what you'd like to talk about. Otherwise, of course, you're going to have to talk about what I want to talk about. Under any circumstances, I hope many of you have actually read my September newsletter, and if you haven't, why, I hope that you'll go ahead and you can get it off the internet simply at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Or if you don't have access to that, we'll go ahead and get you a copy. But most of the things that are happening today were planned long before the 9/11 attack. This whole Islamic terrorist movement was created by Zbigniew Brzezinski and the Central Intelligence Agency. And if you'd like to get into the background of how it was done, let me suggest a book we carry entitled The Devil's Game. And then, of course, you can read my various newsletters. We've actually compiled them into three pamphlets entitled Foreknowledge 9/11. It should be very obvious that our government was planning on this terrorist attack long ahead of time. And you can go back to the video we carry called Jihad in America that has film footage in it from 1988 when Abdullah Azzam, who was the founder of Al-Qaeda, was in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, talking, and they were actually taking pictures of him as he was talking about the coming jihad in America. Now, then they stated the following year why somebody killed Abdullah Azzam. I've always suspected it was the CIA that did it so that bin Laden could come to lead Al-Qaeda, which he did. As soon as Azzam was killed in Pakistan, why, of course, Osama bin Laden became the leader of Al-Qaeda. And then, of course, we find, of course, Osama bin Laden going to Sudan, where he plots the Black Hawk Down incident in Somalia in 1993. But what's interesting, if you've ever studied that, it's obvious that somebody in our own military gave orders to put our men in harm's way. They went completely around the chain of command, which you never do in a military operation. And by going around that chain of command, why they put our boys, where actually 18 of them were actually killed. And bin Laden was involved in planning that whole thing. But why did we fall into his trap? Or maybe nothing as it appears to be. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. It's Open Line Wednesday. Our telephone number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have not yet seen the video, Jihad in America, let me recommend it. Because, of course, this is a video put out by Stephen Emerson. And it was actually released in 1994. And then somebody within the intelligence agency put pressure on all of the major television networks not to show that. Why? Because it started in 1988 with Abdullah Azzam, who is the founder of Al-Qaeda, speaking in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. And then, of course, the following year he was killed, and more of the terrorists were allowed to come in here. And our government knew the terrorists were coming in here, and they have pictures of some of the people involved in the first World Trade Center bombing 7 years before the first World Trade Center bombing at a military training camp in upstate New York. And I suspect much of this was funded by our own intelligence agencies, but we can't let the American people know that. But, of course, he goes into the background of Sheikh Omar Rahman, who was brought to America. I don't recall whether it mentions, but certainly in my other writings and the other books on the subject, nobody questions the fact that the blind Sheikh, who was violently anti-American, who had been involved in the murder of Anwar Sadat, was gotten out of prison in Egypt by the Central Intelligence Agency and then brought to America by the Central Intelligence Agency, a known terrorist, brought to America under a visa sponsored by the CIA. What sort of madness is that? Well, you have to understand that we had to have an enemy, and you create the best enemy sometimes that money could buy. In 1996, a man named Richard N. Haass, who was actually working as the Director of National Security Program at the Council on Foreign Relations, wrote an article. And that article actually originally appeared in the Washington Post, but the Washington Post has no record of it. It was quoted several times by the New American Magazine, and we have those references, but they have no record of the article. But fortunately, we did find it, or my good friend Dr. Dennis Cuddy found the article in the Palm Beach Post. So we actually have the article, and here's what Richard Haass wrote 5 years before the 9/11 attack. The war against terrorism is a war with an unlimited number of battles, none of them decisive. What price are we prepared to pay? The price will be financial and personal. People will have to accept longer lines before entering buildings, longer delays at airports, more intrusive searches of belongings on our persons, and higher ticket prices to pay for all this. Greater vigilance will also involve a willingness to compromise some of our civil liberties, including accepting a more frequent phone taps and surveillance, and those who would resist paying such a price should keep in mind that the terrorism could well get worse in the coming years. There is evidence that the terrorist challenge is entering a new phase. Now, of course, by September 11th, 2001, why Richard Haass was working for the State Department on their counterterrorism program. And today, Richard Haass is the president of the Council on Foreign Relations, America's invisible government, and one of the 130 members of the North American group of the Trilateral Commission, one of the ruling elite of America. Of course, back was 5 years before the 9/11 attack. He knew all about the long lines in buildings. He knew all about the delays at the airports. He knew about the demand for increased government surveillance. Why? because they're using, of course, the threat of terrorism to justify increased surveillance of every law-abiding citizen in America. Why? Because what is going on over in the Middle East is simply a diversion. While our boys go overseas to fight for freedom, why they are planning on doing away with the sovereignty of our nation, as Dr. Corsi talked about last night, they are creating the Security and Prosperity Partnership, and this does whole idea is to join Mexico, the United States, and Canada into a trading bloc, and with that, of course, will come a massive bureaucracy to erode our national sovereignty. They have already done this in Europe. They're doing it in Africa, where 25 nations are negotiating a trade pact there that will create a bureaucracy that will eliminate national sovereignty. Our good friends over in communist China, and believe me, the leaders of our government, or our invisible government, and David Rockefeller, are very good friends with the leaders over there. And in China, in fact, I've been told by people with strong intelligence ties that the family that has the largest private landowners in China today is the Bush family. And Prescott Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush's brother, certainly has bought up a tremendous amount of land right along the ocean there. In a lot of the coastal land in China, it's very hard to buy land, but of course when you're part of the favored family, one of the ruling families of the world, why you're allowed to do that. So our good friends over in communist China, organizing the ASEAN nations, the nations of Asia, into a trade bloc. Hugo Chavez, who's supposedly our enemy and hates America, is chatting and doing everything he can to organize South America into a trading bloc in opposition to the wicked Yankees in the North, and playing his part very well, I believe. And then, of course, once all of these things are in place, all of these trading blocks, the master bureaucracies, the loss of national sovereignty, the institution of a new level of government, and a bureaucratic government, and basically at that point, then they will join all of the trading blocks together to create the new order of the ages, or the world government, call it what you will, the Novus Ordo Seclorum. You'll actually see that, of course, inscribed on the back of the dollar bill, below the occult pyramid on the left side of the dollar bill. And of course you remember George Bush's remarks at the end of his second inaugural address in January 20th of the year 2004, when he said, you know, what our founders declared a new order of the ages. They were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. What was he talking about? What's the new order of the ages? Well, if you look it up on Google, you'll find out the new order of the ages is, the new order of the ages is Novus Ordo Seclorum. You'll see it on the back of your dollar bill. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. One of the interesting books is written recently by Thomas Keane and Lee Hamilton. Thomas Keane, the chairman of the 911 Commission, the 911 Cover-Up Commission, who just happens to be a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, and the vice chairman of the 911 Commission, Lee Hamilton, who just happens to be a member of the Trilateral Commission and a longtime member of the Council on Foreign Relations, and was for at least 10 years, we know of, a member of the Trilateral Commission. They wrote a book called Without Precedent. And it's well worthwhile reading, not because they're going to tell you the truth, but once in a while they have to put something in there that's true, otherwise you wouldn't read it at all. And in one place, of course, they tell us about Condoleezza Rice's testimony before the 911 Commission. It's really fascinating as you read what they wrote at that time. Now, basically what happened was that Condoleezza Rice very reluctantly appeared before the 911 Commission, and Janie Gorlick, who actually happens to be a CFR member, and all of this was stage managed, but it sure was a great show. And Jamie Gorlick, asked Condoleezza, you know, well, why didn't the Bush administration do something to prevent the attack? Certainly there was all sorts of information that the attack was coming. Why didn't you do something to try to block the terrorist attack? And now I'm simply quoting from the book. Rice pointed out that the nation simply wasn't prepared to take dramatic action against Al-Qaeda before the 9-1-1 attack, either abroad or in reforming government at home, and said, and I quote, "Until there is a catastrophic event that forces people to think differently, that forces people to overcome all customs and old cultures and old fears about domestic intelligence, you don't get that sort of change." Let me give you that quotation again. "Until there is a catastrophic event that forces people to think differently, that forces people to overcome all customs and old cultures and old fears about domestic intelligence, you don't get that sort of change." In other words, they had to have an incident so that they could get the American people to be willing to go to war. And so they'd be willing to accept increasing government surveillance and all of the things that goes with it. And 9/11 was that incident. When Donald Rumsfeld was questioned about this, he said, "Well, of course we were working on a plan. Of course we were working on a plan. Why, of course, you know, in fact, the plan was just about complete. It was completed on September 10th. Ladies and gentlemen, the attack occurred on September 11th. What do you think the chances are that the Al-Qaeda attack, the terrorist attack on America happened to occur just the day after the plan for attacking Al-Qaeda was completed? And what was the plan? Well, it was basically the plan that Richard Clark had submitted to the Bush administration. It developed under the Clintons. He actually says in his book, Against All Enemies, that we had a plan, but we didn't want to begin implementing it and leave a war for the next administration, so we held off. But it involved, of course, using special forces and air power to take out Al-Qaeda and to destroy their base in Afghanistan. And then, of course, it goes into all the other things. And we followed that plan step by step by step. So basically, everything was put in place. The special forces troops were moved into place. The air force, the naval ships were moved into place. They were simply waiting for the 9-1-1 attack. And, of course, if you'd like, some evening we can talk about how we know they knew where the attack was coming. They knew when the attack was coming, and not only that, of course, that they planted all sorts of images onto the screens there of the at NORAD and the FDA to confuse the people so that there would be no defense either for New York or for Washington, D.C. And if you haven't read that great article, it's in Vanity Fair magazine for September of this year. You need to get it, where actually they go into the interview that the author had with the man who was in command of the NORAD headquarters on September 11th. Did you know at one time they were actually tracking some 24 to 26 hijacked planes? Obviously, somebody was intensely confusing them. Did you know that after American Flight 11 had crashed into the North Tower, there was still transponder evidence that was flying towards Washington, D.C.? How could that happen? Obviously, somebody in some intelligence agency, because I don't think it was Osama bin Laden hiding over in a cave in Pakistan, somebody was planting information, you know, on the screens, monitors there at NORAD. You really need to read the article and understand that what happened that day was unconscionable. And then you need, of course, to go up on the Internet, go to Google and type in the video Building 7, and you'll see all of them, and you'll see the building come down, and you watch it a few times. You realize that had nothing to do with the attack on the World Trade Center. That was a controlled demolition. And if they lied about that, then everything is a lie. And 3,000 Americans, almost 3,000 Americans, died that day. Simply, they were a sacrifice to justify us getting into the war. And, of course, if you doubt that, you need to get the book we carry called See No Evil by Robert Byrd, who quotes one of the leaders of the CIA as saying, off the record, "When the dust finally settles, the American people will realize 9-1-1 was not a failure of intelligence. It was a triumph." Our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we've got Bill calling from Coeur d'Alene. Hi, Bill. How are you doing?
Good, Dr. Stan. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
I was just curious about the quote that you gave from Condoleezza Rice. Don't you think that's true, though, that, you know, that if they would have just suddenly announced things like, you know, we have to have heightened security at airports and, you know, all the intense scrutiny of things that everyone would have said, you know, the government's way overreacting, that actually, you know, unfortunately it did take an event like that to kind of wake us up?
But do you think it's justified to kill 3,000 Americans for that, to accomplish that? No, I think if they'd really been truthful with the American people, they'd done everything they could to play down the terrorist threat. Had they allowed that video, Jihad in America, have you seen that? Ever seen that, Bill?
Is that the one on the Internet?
No, I don't know whether it's up there or not. It was actually done by Stephen Emerson. It was released in 1994, shown one time on television, and then blocked because somebody did not want the American people to know that there was this terrorist threat. And, of course, much of it was being funded from America. Stephen Emerson wrote a book called American Jihad, where he actually recorded the testimony before the various Senate and House committees, pointing out that this whole Islamic terrorist movement was being funded for America. That information was blacked out by the media. Had they been honest with the American people and told them what was going on, why, of course, I think they would have accepted the fact we had to have increased government surveillance. But you see, they didn't want a solution. They wanted the problem because they wanted to take us into war. And that's how the Christie got us into the Vietnam War, the Gulf of Tonkin incident. It was phony.
How can we overthrow the government and put some people in that will stop this? I mean, this is corruption at the... at the very highest levels. I mean, we've got to overthrow the government.
No, we don't have to overthrow the government. We've got to educate the American people and get them to value freedom more than they do the soft and affluent life they live in. They have to understand what these values are, and then they've got to become organized and begin taking our community back block by block, precinct by precinct, county by county, state by state. That's how we're going to do it. But it's got to be with education.
You know, I noticed, and one thing I'm very interested in is the Berkey water filter system. You know, talking about just sort of like being prepared.
Right.
And I noticed in your ad that you quote scientists from the EPA saying that fluoride is dangerous, but how can you trust the EPA?
Well, of course, these are the people that actually are working by the EPA who are trying to get the truth out. We have all sorts of scientific evidence how dangerous fluoride is. But
the scientists
and the lawyers and the engineers who work for the Environmental Protection Agency realize, of course, how dangerous fluoride is, and they're trying to get the word out. It's being effectively blocked.
So but they work for the federal government. I don't believe them. I mean, they're on, you know, on all the 9/11 stuff.
Why would you make that statement, Bill? Why would you make the statement that the EPA would be in on the 9/11 stuff?
Well, they're all part of the corrupt federal government.
Everybody. Most of the people who work for the federal government are good people. There's only a very, very small component. A very small component who are part of the dark side of government.
That's not the way you've portrayed it to me. I think
you misunderstood.
I'm confused.
There is a small group of people who really know what's going on. Most people have no idea. So I think maybe you've misunderstood. There are a lot of wonderful people who work for the federal government who are trying to get the truth out, as they are doing. And I suggest you go to their website.
How come they don't kill them?
Well, maybe they will. And maybe they're going to kill me. But you see, what you're doing, Bill, is making ridiculous statements. Thanks very much for your call. Okay, and we'll be back here in just a moment. Of course, we've got Jack calling from... Hi, Jack. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I feel sorry for Bill there because he fails to recognize that throughout history it's always the case, as you were intimating, that it's always the hierarchical individuals who have these secret society affiliations who are the ones who suppress information and demote and defund the scientists at the lower levels who are doing all the research.
Okay, Jack, that was, of course, is a made-up call. I mean, anybody who says we've got to overthrow the government is actually talking about treasonous activity. Why would he make a statement like that on national radio? And then, of course, he makes the statement, why should we believe anybody who works for the government? There are lots of good people who work for the government. They just don't get a chance to get their information out.
In fact, Dr. Stan, I would remind Bill, you've had Ted Gunderson on in the past, haven't you?
Right.
And he's a retired FBI fellow who has got some stellar knowledge he presents. And I just want to remind Bill that this is always, doesn't it go back to the Revolutionary War, Dr. Stan, where it was some secret society people who were attempting to force, you know, their draconian taxation programs upon the colonists, upon the, you know, the people out east there, and they said, no, we want our religious freedom, we want our freedom to conduct our lives as we see fit. But it was always a hierarchy, right, that was trying to force enslavement.
You're absolutely right. And of course, one of the big things at that time, the time of the Revolutionary War, was the King George wanted to actually have an Anglican a bishop come over and take over control of all the religions in the colonies. And here you've got your Congregationalists, you've got your Presbyterians, you've got your Puritans, you've got your Huguenots, you've got your Quakers, and they didn't want somebody coming over from England to tell everybody how to worship our Lord.
And in other words, Dr. Stan, a state sponsored religion.
Right, that's exactly what they wanted. That's what they had in England, you know, everything under the Anglican Church, and of course that's what they wanted to impose here. And that, along, of course, with the taxation without representation. And then, of course, there were these people at the time, you know, and they were part of the secret societies who wanted America, of course, to lead the world eventually into this new world order. Yep. So they wanted the revolution too. So you had two groups, you had the Christian group, and then you had the occult group. And that's what most people don't understand. As with everything that we face today, there's this dualism out there.
Indeed, Dr. Stan. Well,
God bless. Thanks for calling, Jeff.
God bless you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course this is the time when I need to remind all of our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours a day, buying radio time, certainly internet time 5 hours a day, satellite time 9 hours a day, and shortwave 4 hours a day. But it's an all-expensive proposition. If you believe what we're doing, if you believe we need to get the truth out, if you believe that behind everything going on there are dark and sinister spiritual forces, why, we hope many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And all you have to do is give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then if you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter, why, of course, we'd be glad to send you one. But you can, of course, pull our newsletters down, and those quotations I just gave you from Condoleezza Rice and from Donald Rumsfeld come from my newsletter, and you can get that. That's the September newsletter available at Radio Liberty. If you want to check the book Without Precedent, the quotation comes from page 161 and page 180. Condoleezza Rice on page 180. Why? Donald Rumsfeld's quotation comes from page 161. So you need to find out, and you ought to check out and see if I'm telling you the truth. If I am, then you should become involved. Some people would say, oh, well, they had to go ahead and do this, you know. How else were we going to get us into a war? What sort of a human being would make that statement to justify the murder of 3,000 Americans to get us into a war? Well, I guess there are people out there who really feel that way. There are people who justified what Franklin Delano Roosevelt did on December 7th, 1941. We had to get into the war, so we sacrificed those men. Because, you see, Franklin Delano Roosevelt had a different set of values. He really did not worship the God of the Bible. He was involved with astrology. We used, actually, Gene Dixon, as I remember, was one of his astrologers. And of course, he was into the occult, because he was a good friend of Colonel Edward Mandel House, who had dominated the Woodrow Wilson administration and dominated the Roosevelt administration until Colonel House went to his just reward. And I suspect it's in a very, very hot place. Colonel House, of course, was an occultist deeply involved in the occult, who had the ability to control the minds of both Woodrow Wilson and Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And I suspect his influence his demonic spirit continued to influence Roosevelt's decisions as he moved us towards World War II and, of course, the tragedy of Pearl Harbor. Well, ladies and gentlemen, of course, you'd like more information on the things we're talking about. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You want to understand Pearl Harbor, you need to get our four-tape set entitled Pearl Harbor. And you'll actually hear my interviews with Robert Stennett and John Tolan. And we carry Robert Stennett's book on Pearl Harbor. And, of course, we carry another book called Day of Deceit. So you can just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get the documentation, and you'd like to see the pages from Secretary of War Simpson's diary, which I found back at Yale University, and where he talks about going to the White House on November 25th, where with three other or four other men, and Franklin Roosevelt said, "The war is coming. We expect it next Monday." That was, of course, a week early. And then the theme was, "We've got to get into the war and get the Japanese to fire the first shot." And that's what it was all about. That's, of course, why they had to have an incident on September 11th, 2001, because they wanted to go to war. First with Afghanistan, second with Iraq, and third with Iran. And I fear that that is going to continue anyway. I believe we're in terrible trouble today. We're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization. Please pray for America and pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Well, we'll be back this next hour. We're going to have Andrew Skousen on the line, and of course, we'll look forward to an exciting program. Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls, because we have with us from the Las Vegas area, Andrew Skousen, who works with World Affairs Brief. He's one of the researchers from World Affairs Brief. And we're going to be talking about, well, what are we going to be talking about tonight, Andrew?
Good evening, Dr. Stan. Pleasure to be with you.
It's good to have you back again.
Thanks. Well, there's of course, quite a bit to talk about. There's a few breaking news items that have happened just today. I've been sort of scrambling to prepare for this interview because there's been so much new that has just recently come out, what with President Donald Rumsfeld stepping down and the final outcomes of the elections and what that means for the futures. I think we've got some pretty good ideas for you, but I'd also still like to get into some of the the world events that continue to happen while we're preoccupied with our own internal politics here, and maybe we'll get a chance to touch on a little bit of both.
All right, fine. You go right ahead.
All right. Well, it's fairly interesting what's happened, of course, with the election. A new wind of change, of course, is coming over the both houses of Congress, with the Democrats gaining majority in both the House of Representatives, as well as, we found out just recently, the final count in the Senate is also in favor of the Democrats, with Jim Webb actually coming out on top in that election, which is a bit of a surprise since he was running in Virginia, but in my dad's opinion, he's a fairly good guy and actually sort of on the conservative side, which is probably one of the only reasons that a Democrat could win in Virginia, which I believe is mostly a conservative state.
And I think really what's so interesting is the Democrats won, actually ran a fair number of very moderate or conservative Democrats. In other words, what they wanted to do was, of course, put Democrats up who were many times more conservative than their Republican opponents, and it was the moderate of Republicans, the liberal Republicans, who went down in flames.
That's right, and that's a very good point. People are looking for the same values that they always hold. It's just which party is more or less in favor now. And of course, the general media at large has been quick to point out the problems with the war in Iraq, as well as the scandals, which, in my opinion, were timed, and it was fairly obvious how they were timed to coincide with the outcome of the elections to give the Democrats a much greater advantage.
In fact, I almost have the feeling, as you saw each one of the new books come out, whether it be Bob Woodward books or David Coe's books or the Foley scandal or the Ted Hackett scandal, almost like somebody had orchestrated this whole thing. Did you ever have that impression?
Absolutely. In fact, I was surprised that more people didn't get that impression. It seems so blatantly obvious that it was timed to coincide with the election.
What was it Edward Bernays said? You know, we're governed, our minds are molded, our tastes are formed, our ideas suggested largely by men we have never heard of. We'll go right ahead, Andrew.
All right. Well, for the Republicans, I think it was still a bit of a surprise. They had been in power for 12 years in the House, but to the rest of us, who I think at least most of the people that have been watching politics, it was not so much a surprise. One of the points that I don't think the press is bringing out is how much the public image of George W. Bush actually has hurt the Republicans and the conservatives alike. He is, despite how much most of the conservatives here in the States want to believe that he is our president, he does not have good presentation skills. His quotes that people constantly rap him about are real and true. He's not the most outspoken, upstanding American that should be representing our country. And coupled with the consistent inappropriate way of portraying the conservative ideals, or better yet said, betraying the conservative ideals, it leads to a great deal of distaste in people's minds about the whole conservative movement at large. Most people now can't help but associate the ideals of of conservative things, even though most of them aren't truly followed by President Bush, such as a smaller government, less taxation, a tighter budget. All of these things have been thrown into the trash by President Bush as he goes about with the warmongering in Iraq, as well as his adherence to a ulterior agenda that does not have conservative principles with it. And all of this, I think, is coming to light as a backlash against all of the congressmen and senators who have lost a great deal of their grassroots support during this past election because they're associated with President Bush. And I think
let's hope we'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Andrew is saying that he feels that a lot of the votes were cast for Democrats were really votes cast against George Bush, because he purports to be conservative, and he's not. He purports to be evangelical Christian, and of course only God knows what's in his heart, but many of his actions certainly do not honor our Lord. And certainly when you say something, you should mean it, and when you say one thing, you do another. Why, this tends to discredit Christianity. It tends to discredit conservatives, and I think it is fairly well discredited in the hearts and minds of the American people, the Republican Party, and its traditional ideals. So you pick this story up, Andrew.
That's right, but I think that this is this is done on purpose. As I stated before, I think that the president's past have been more of puppets rather than following their own agenda. If you look at the consistency with which the government at large has taken our country in a direction, it has not switched directions with each of the changes in political parties that are in charge of the president's branch of the government. In fact, it has continued to expand its debt, to expand the social programs, to expand the size and breadth of government and its agencies. In fact, it's very difficult to point to any significant areas where a change in the presidential party has resulted in a turnaround in a policy of government at large. I think that most people think that of course, there is a great deal of talk about the various factions and differences and political jockeying that goes on. But if you look at the end result of what happens in politics, I think that most people would have to honestly agree that there is very little change that happens with changes in. The ruling parties of our government, and I think this is an indication that there is a agenda behind the scenes that is directing what goes on, whether the Democratic Party or the Republican Party is in charge. So, a bit of conclusions then about what's going on. What would be the reasons then for the powers that be to recommend or to want for there to be a change in government? Clearly, they were getting a great deal of change to happen under President Bush. We saw with the legislative changes that recently got passed for Homeland Security, with the erosion of our fundamental rights. You and I, Dr. Stan, spent a great deal of time talking about this most recent bit of legislation that took away some fundamental rights for non-citizens. And so the question is, what then is the purpose of now having opposing or supposedly opposing groups inside of Congress at this time? Now we have a Republican president and Democratic Congress. Well, unlike some people who hope that this will at least tie things up a bit more and provide a few more checks and balances with what government is trying to do as far as erosion of liberty, which is at least considered a good thing when government's hands are tied a bit more. In fact, I believe that the opposite is true. In fact, I think that the tactics will nearly change, but we won't see much change with the Democratic shift. I mean, with the shift toward the Democratic Party that we've seen. I think that it's going to put people to sleep for a bit because they will think that now there is going to be some kind of change to occur in Iraq. It's going to pull away some of the criticism from towards the government, hoping to give them time to affect these changes. And there's a great deal of rhetoric being spent right now as the elections are winding down. For instance, one of the Democratic leaders, Frank Poloni, talked about some of the key points that the Democrats want to change with the war in Iraq. They talked about reconciliation of all ethnic groups, which quite frankly is impossible. Regional cooperation, which is very difficult, particularly how to decide how to divide up the oil that comes from the money from over there. He talked about reconstruction, which is doable if civil war doesn't continue to keep that from happening. And lastly, redeployment of U.S. troops, which is hopefully going to happen, but we at the World Affairs Brief don't have much encouragement of that actually happening. Like we've talked about before, we think that an attack on Iran will come before troops are pulled out of Iraq, which will of course cause them to stay for who knows how much longer, and so we'll just get more tied up with that.
Well, I think what's so interesting is that the Iraqis want us to get out of Iraq. The people who are running the government want the American troops out because they realize that this unrest is going to continue until the Americans are gone. I mean, there are many people in Iraq who hated Saddam Hussein who were so glad when he was gone. But, of course, then to replace Saddam with occupation forces from the United States, who obviously were not there, of course, to preserve freedom. They were there to control the society. Had they wanted simply to maintain the status quo and bring together an Iraqi army, an Iraqi government, they would have left the army and the police force and the civil service intact. Instead of that, they dissolved them. It's very interesting that within the last few days, why the Shia leaders have offered almost 1 million to 1.5 million Sunni Muslims who were in Saddam's government the opportunity either to return to their posts or to get pensions, hoping, of course, to placate them as long as they weren't criminals, if not participated in criminal activity, to bring them back to try to restore the stability of the nation. That Paul Bremer, from the Council on Foreign Relations, is a good friend of Henry Kissinger, that Paul Bremer destroyed when he was sent there as presidential envoy. So the Iraqis are trying to come up with a solution. They want to get America out. They want to restore the government that existed under Saddam, without Saddam there and without the authoritarian government that he had. It's going to be very interesting to see if we'll allow that to happen. If we really want a solution, or we simply want to maintain the problem so that we can justify keeping our forces there. I fear that will be the case.
That's right. That's right. In fact, recently the Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki was actually trying to break away, it seems, from his previous post as merely a puppet. He it seemed, was trying to test just how far the U.S. was actually willing to let him go in asserting Iraqi's so-called independence. After a military raid into the heart of al-Sadr's militia territory, al-Maliki was quick to disavow any Iraqi government involvement in the attack. And just this past week, he asked or ordered, I'm sorry, ordered the dismantling of U.S. checkpoints in Baghdad. Of course, these checkpoints have been a major sore point with the Shiite civilian population, which are constantly hampered by these areas, as well as it being actually mortally dangerous for civilians to pass through these. If any of the commands by the U.S. troops aren't followed precisely, and sometimes they're difficult to interpret, then it's possible to get your entire car shot up, because the soldiers there are quite frankly in a bit of fear and scared of terrorist bombs, but don't have the critical thinking and the level of intelligence to make critical decisions at those times, and consequently, frankly, a lot of the civilians get killed. And so it's quite dangerous for some of these civilians just to try to live their daily life to get through these checkpoints. So al-Maliki was attempting to order that these checkpoints be dismantled. These, of course, are, if the U.S. actually complies with this request, they will lose what little control they now have of Baghdad. Outside of the fortified green zone, there's very little control of Baghdad itself. A veteran reporter from there called Patrick Cockburn explained most of what was going on there, and he had some very interesting insights into the level of control that the U.S. currently has over Baghdad and the civilian streets that are there. He says that the U.S. has its own dedicated protected roads, which are mostly those that interconnect just the major military bases, and that very few of them control the civilian roads themselves, which are basically in the hands of the civilian population themselves.
And first, what the Lawi wants is he wants to be able to control the army. He wants to, of course, to be able to control his country, and we don't want him to. We want to run the country. We'll go right ahead there.
All right. Well, it's quite difficult to run the country because the Sunni insurgents have cut the roads linking Baghdad to the rest of Iraq. The country is currently being partitioned as various militiamen fight bloody battles over control of turf, of towns and villages, both to the north and south of the capital. So while American and British political leaders are arguing over the responsibility for the crisis in Iraq, the country keeps lurching towards disintegration. In fact, well-armed Sunni tribes now largely surround Baghdad and are fighting Shia militias to complete the encirclement. The Sunni insurgents seem to be following a plan to control all the approaches to Baghdad. They have long held the highway leading west to the Jordanian border and east into the Diyala province. And now they seem to be attempting to systematically take over the routes leading north and south. This is a very dangerous situation.
The logical solution would be divided into the Shia, the Sunni, and the Kurdish areas, and let the people establish their own governments. That would be the logical thing to have done. In fact, we should have done it immediately, when we went in there, because you can't mix the Shia and the Sunni. It's like mixing oil and water. They've always hated one another. One has always been in charge. And the best thing is let them establish their own governments. But we don't want to do that, because if we did that, you would have stability. And if they had stability, how could we possibly justify staying there? And so, we leave these Shia militias there, and of course many of these make up the death squads. We establish a new police force, and of course it contains all sorts of people who are part of the underground there, who are actually killing people and torturing people, and there's articles about the terrible things that are going on in the formerly Saddam-controlled jails, where there was torture and murder and rape, and now we control them, and there's torture and murder and rape. What we've got to do is let Iraq solve Iraq's problems and get the Americans out of there. As long as we are there, they're going to look upon us as invaders, and that's exactly what we are. We are not liberators. We are invaders. How would we feel if there were Chinese troops stationed in America, or Russian troops stationed in America, or Mexican troops stationed in America telling Americans what to do, with checkpoints at all of our, along all of our highways? It'd be tremendous resentment. And that's the way the Iraqis feel.
Yes, right. And I think sometimes we don't comprehend just exactly how much worse off the country is there right now in the midst of all this conflict and turmoil and civil war than it would be if America pulled out and let things erupt into civil war and then hopefully stabilize. Of course, that's not the ideal situation. Ideally, we would want people to have the same system of government as we do, with democracy, etc. But it's not up to us to go out of our borders and try to enforce this on people. One of the interesting comparisons that my father wrote about in this past week's World Affairs Brief was a comparison between the public perception of this war in Iraq with the public perception of the war in Vietnam while he was there in the military at that time.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back with Andrew Skousen. Well, this is Archie Stan, and Andrew was just talking about this idea of the comparison between Vietnam and Iraq, and you're told, oh, there's no comparison at all. Of course there's a comparison. I mean, Henry Kissinger was the dominant force behind the perpetuation of that war from 1968 to 1973, and doing everything he could to keep it from being won, Henry Kissinger. And if you read the latest book by Bob Woodward, A State of Denial, he will tell you that Henry Kissinger is the major architect behind this war and keeps telling the president there is no alternative but victory. That's what they kept telling Richard Nixon. And how many American boys died in a war that we were doomed to lose because we were financing the North Vietnamese and allowing them, you know, to continue the war? They couldn't have kept that war going for 10 years without tremendous help from Russia that was being financed by the United States. And, of course, who's providing all the supplies? You know, who's providing the funding for all the insurgents there? Nobody ever wants to ask that question. So pick the story up there, Andrew.
No, you're absolutely right. My father echoes those thoughts. He says, during my military experience in the Vietnam era, it was open season on military personnel. They were drafted and betrayed by the political globalists of the day. He says, yes, our pompous leaders could have pulled out the same super patriotic tricks that they use today to manufacture public support, but they did not. They had a different agenda for war then. The Vietnam so-called no-win war was created and artificially lost in order to poison Americans' desire to defend the world against communist aggression. Draftees and volunteers were given no welcome home parades, nor treated with patriotic local news coverage like they are today. On the contrary, the media kept up a near constant barrage of anti-war messages. There was no mass production of magnetic yellow ribbon stickers distributed to military families to put on their cars. Military veterans were reviled and dishonored or simply forgotten. Even the Vietnam War Memorial in Washington, D.C. was designed as a depression in the ground. But then why is it suddenly different today? Why is suddenly now war something to be lauded and praised? He says, it's because war is serving the purpose of suckering us into a greater conflict leading to a new world order without liberty. Recently, John Kerry made a mildly critical slur of U.S. troops in Iraq, which was paraded and criticized all across the news. In fact, the offending statement was this. It was at a Los Angeles rally for the Democratic gubernatorial candidate, Phil Angelides, and he said, quote, "You know education. If you make the most of it, you study hard, you do your homework, and you make an effort to be smart, you can do well. If you don't, you get stuck in Iraq." That was it. It was a joke, in fact, a political jab in the form of a joke. And of course, President Bush, in fact, ultimate hypocrite who put our troops in Iraq on false pretenses, proclaimed to be offended and demanded an apology. Kerry, instead of standing his ground, actually complied and then tried to call himself a combat veteran and tried to backpedal, etc. But this brought to light a very important point, which none of the politicians in this election lost, and that was that they would be utterly vilified if any of them were to utter any criticism of "quote unquote our troops" or the troops defending our country. My father couldn't disagree more. In fact, he says that these troops are not in Iraq defending our country, and the conduct, frankly, of many of our troops is not a worthy example that Americans should embrace as Americans. Kerry was actually right about some of the soldiers in Iraq now. Many of them are young. Most of them aren't the best examples of American boys. Many of them can't control their language or sensual drives, and yet here we are handing them automatic weapons and giving them power over the life and death of Iraqis there. Granted, there are notable exceptions, people who rise to the occasion, people who take on proper leadership responsibilities, but in general, most of them are morally corrupt, drink to excess, are braggarts, and often use the foulest of language. Many are high school dropouts, drug users, and most have chronic bad judgment, which does not spell well for the Iraqis who rely on them for their lives.
Well, I think that they're over there, of course, they think they're fighting for America, but while they're fighting over there for America, we're losing our freedom here at home as we unite with Mexico and Canada. It's a great diversion. We don't really see what's happening. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We're back here with Andrew Skousen. We're talking about really what's going on over in Iraq, that really the elections that were lost by the Republicans yesterday were not necessarily a vote for the Democrat agenda. They were a vote against George Bush and the Republican agenda, at least as he's presented it, but he really hasn't presented the Republican agenda. George Bush has been passing Teddy Kennedy's legislation, both the Medicare drug bill and the No Child Left Behind programs were Teddy Kennedy's legislation. And you must understand that in the year 2003, the Bush Family Foundation gave their most honored award of Citizen of the Year to none other than Ted Kennedy. So you have to understand that most of what we see, this fight back and forth between the Republicans and Democrats, is as phony as a $3 bill. And I'll never forget, it was the Super Bowl, not this last year, but the year before that, when, of course, who should go to the Super Bowl together but George Bush and Bill Clinton. And when they sang the Star Spangled Banner, why, of course, many people were there with their hand over their chest, you know. And, of course, most of the people were singing, and some of them, you know, were very, very deeply touched by what was going on and by the national anthem, Star Spangled Banner. Then the camera went to George Bush and Bill Clinton. Neither one of them were saluting. Neither one of them was singing. Both of them looked terribly bored. So go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point. It's what people do on their time off that really describes who they are, especially politicians.
Of course, that was George Herbert Walker Bush, the president's father. So go ahead.
Right, that's right. Well, that's a good point that you bring up about the Republicans and the Democrats being not that much different from each other, and that brings me to a point about what we can expect then from the results of these elections. In our opinion, at the World Affairs Brief, there is actually a danger in the next 2 years ahead because of the potential for Bush to get much of his agenda done and hiding behind it in the name of just acting in bipartisanship. One of the scariest things that could possibly come about in the next 2 years would be to introduce a fair amount of dangerous social legislation.
Hold that thought, we'll be right back.
Yeah.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and before we go on with Andrew, our guest, Andrew Skousen, Andrew, would you like to get your website out and how people can get in touch with the World Affairs Brief?
Yes, thank you, Dr. Stan. I think the best way for people to see what's happening at the World Affairs Brief is to log on to our website. The website is www.worldaffairsbrief.com. That's one word, worldaffairsbrief.com. And there they will find a short transcript of the formal story in the World Affairs Brief, and then they can see links to all of the stories that our researchers pull up from all across the news sources across the Internet, and it's sort of a hub of information to get links to all of the stories that support and provide a more well-rounded idea of what's really going on out there. So they can also find a link on that website to sign up for the World Affairs Brief, which is a more in-depth analysis of what the news is as well as where it's going. For instance, these elections that we are talking about now, the World Affairs Brief takes apart what it thinks is the end result and what will happen because of the Democrats being in the party and what that will mean in 2 years during the next presidential election. And they can sign up for that World Affairs Brief, which was mostly written by my father, Joel Skousen, who has years of analyzing these news and events. But if people don't have access to the Internet, they can get a free copy of the World Affairs Brief mailed to them by calling this number. It's toll-free, 1-877-518-5888. Once again, that's 1-877-518-5888.
Now, I invite Ed, when we were in the break there, Andrew was saying that one of the things they were concerned about was that Bush was going to get through a lot of his socialist or social legislation under the guise of bipartisanship with the Democratic majority, which controls the House and the Senate. Would you like to explore that concept, Andrew?
Yes, I think that what the agenda has been in the past behind the scenes for both parties, in fact, is and I'm worried about this, in fact, is the passage of universal health insurance. This has been consistently being brought up and beaten back down, then brought up again, and then beaten back down. And I have a feeling that the Democratic Congress will propose this. And then Bush will attempt to work out a quote unquote compromise and end up signing this into law. This is the worst worry that we have at the World Affairs Brief for the next two years of this Congress and president together, but it's
well, of course, the national health care program would be a disaster. I mean, we have real problems with the health care delivery system. But if you track this, as I have as a physician, it all came about because of government interference in the private delivery system, which worked very efficiently. And then, of course, we had a local delivery system in every county in the United States. It was a county hospital, or at least the county had the responsibility for providing health care for the people who couldn't provide it for themselves. But you see, if you want to control people, you control their health care delivery system. And so they introduced this incrementally through Medicare, through Medicaid, and through then these various programs in the states. Oh, we have to help the children is the cry. And, of course, what they really want to do is be able to control the children and force them to be vaccinated, which, of course, many of the vaccines are very, very harmful. And, in fact, but that's neither here nor there, and under any circumstances. I mean, what really can, I share your concern, Andrew, that they will try to get through a national health care system. George Bush, if he was really a conservative, would veto it. Well, I will tell you, George Bush is not a conservative. He does not believe in the Constitution. And I can say that because I'm one of the small group of people who was instrumental with the evangelical Christians of picking George Bush. And only a few of us who attended those meetings already could see through this veneer that pretends to be a conservative Christian and certainly is not. So, right. Under any circumstances, pick up the story there, Andrew.
Well, I completely echo your concerns about the problems with a socialized form of medicine. If you look at all of the other countries where this has been put in place, it drags down all of the hospitals. It ends up being or causing extremely long lines for any kind of service. Because it's free, people don't try to take care of themselves or to search and find natural remedies or preventative cures. People get hooked on this dole of free access to doctors and medicine and of course the major drug industries receive a huge boon because of it, and it ends up spiraling down into a very depressed form of practicing medicine. And I'd be scared if it had ended up happening here, which it looks like it probably will. But more than that, at the World Affairs Brief, we think that the tactics here of letting the Democrats have all the power in Congress is to actually set up the Democrats for a failure in 2 years during the next presidential election. We think that despite all of the rhetoric now to change the war in Iraq with the scandals, etc., that we will give all of the power to the Democrats in Congress and then allow them to fail. And this will set up the possible Republican presidential victory in 2008. On the contrary, the Republicans were to hold power and continue to mess things up, I don't think it would be possible for the powers that be to be able to elect another Republican president to continue the war mongering that they have planned for our country in the next presidential session of 2008 and beyond. I think that we're being set up to continue to have a neoconservative president in office. And just to throw out a possibility, it's potentially likely that Giuliani will run for the president under the Republican Party, and he may in fact go up against Hillary Clinton, which many of the conservatives are absolutely scared to death about, and many of the middle of the road people as well. And this is a a classic tactic to use during politics. If you want to get one party that is potentially less favored by the people at large, is to put them in opposition to an extreme candidate in the opposition. And I think that Hillary Clinton fits that bill well. And many people would be sent away from voting for Hillary just to avoid that. Also, I think that Hillary is being set up for failure. She's got a little too much of her own agenda to work well as a political ploy, as a puppet to continue this ulterior agenda of causing war of engendering war by way of the United States attacking other countries and creating hatred among those people. And that has to happen with a Republican president who follows orders well. And I don't think that Hillary Clinton would follow commands. So just an idea about what is possibly being set up here for the future. The Democrats are given power now, but we don't believe that we will see much change in Iraq because of this change in Congress. If anything, we will see the both sides carry the government towards more debt, towards more federal programs, towards more problem benefits being given to a benefit-corrupted majority, and we will see that corrupted majority grow ever larger and make it difficult for principled voters out there to vote for people who truly have a conscience and who truly see that the best way to rule government is theft. And as the benefit corrupted majority grows larger and larger, it will be ever increasingly difficult to get people into office who aren't willing to sell themselves out to all of these immoral programs that are constantly or that are continually being augmented and resulting in both deficit spending and increased taxation. So it's going to be interesting to see where our country ends up here, but honestly, I don't think that there's going to be much change in the general direction. So
I think you're absolutely right, Andrew. Go right ahead.
Well, I'd like to possibly touch on some of the other smaller items that have come up in the news in this past week. There's been talk about the FDA's real agenda. You perhaps have a point of view on this, Dr. Fan, but it doesn't seem like the Food and Drug Administration has truly been on the side of just protecting people from negative effects of what's being sold and marketed as goods and drugs.
Agree with you. I think that the Federal Drug Administration is in bed with the pharmaceutical industry. The men who work there, they either get bribes or they get an opportunity to go to work for the pharmaceutical agents. After they've left the government, they get exorbitant salaries. These people have betrayed the trust of the American people. The Federal Drug Administration, in my estimation, is hazardous to the health of every citizen. Go right ahead.
That's right. One of the companies that the FDA allowed to market a drug includes not one of the companies, but some of the drugs that the FDA has recently allowed to be passed include the toxin aspartame, which is known to affect the brain as well as complicate the digestion system, since the body tried to use it as sugar, and it resists that. They've also allowed the use of PCBs, which once ingested into the human body, actually get stored in the fat. And they've actually taken human fat samples and found a large amount of these PCBs in people who take the products in which they are found. And they are stored in dangerous organs as well, such as the heart and the liver and the kidneys. Many of the chemicals that we find that are polluting our environment are found in the very food that the FDA is allowing to get passed. And these also include genetically modified foods. There's, of course, been a great deal of debate with Europe not wanting to allow the U.S. to import its meat, including things such as meat from animals that were cloned. And the FDA has not allowed these foods to be labeled as such so that people can naturally choose whether or not they would like to eat them. As a consumer, I personally would like to know if the meat that I am buying has been genetically modified or not, and to be free to see that and choose to make a different selection, and thus use the free market principles to be able to send a message back to the beef growers that I prefer a certain kind of healthy meat.
Now, because over in Europe, of course, as far as genetically modified foods, I mean, the people of Europe don't want them. They know the studies and they know the hazards. Here in America, you're not even allowed to know. In fact, if you want to label your product not genetically modified, you get in trouble with the FDA. So, I mean, they're taking away our freedom, and I really believe much of what they're doing is destructive to the health of the American people. And those people who listen to our programs regularly, as we've discussed the medications, the genetically modified food, the aspartame, the mercury-containing products, the fluoride-containing products, so many things they're doing, which are damaging the health of our children. And the tragedy is, I fear it's being done intentionally. Go right ahead.
Well, I think I don't want to give the impression that this is by necessity an improper role of government to try to regulate what should be a concern to people. The problem, though, is when corruption takes place, such as what we are seeing now with the FDA, with its connection to big pharmaceutical companies, and the subsequent sort of politicking that goes on between people. This is a classic case of government collusion resulting in terrible side effects to people in general. I mean, you just look at the drugs that people take and how it is actually causing more dangerous side effects than the original problem that they were hoping to resolve with the drug, and it's simply adding more and more toxins to people. It's causing high blood pressure and fattens, and it's causing people to gain weight or lose energy, and each one of these things is supposedly cured by a different drug which has its own side effect, and it's like a domino effect, and it ends up with people feeling terrible and loaded down with terrible drugs.
Amen to that, and people are going to have to learn what the truth is and start looking after their own health. Well, Andrew, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
All right. Well, I think that we've talked about a large number of things. We've talked about the politics, about Iraq, and about health. In fact, one last note that perhaps I didn't wrap up well was our comments about the stepping down of Donald Rumsfeld, which just happened today. He is being replaced with a nomination by President Bush. President Bush chose the former CIA chief, Robert Gates, who was in charge of that agency from 1991 until 1993, and he is destined to be the next Secretary of Defense. Now, why was this an important move? Well, it was an important move because people think that that Rumsfeld was, in fact, the person that was always in the news whenever something negative happened. He was sort of the sacrificial anode here for the war in Iraq. Every time there was a negative bit of news, it's been sort of kind of in a roundabout way attributed to Rumsfeld. And now that they are taking Rumsfeld out of the picture, it kind of takes away the whipping boy and leads to people thinking that perhaps now there's going to be a change. In fact, we believe that just the opposite is happening, that it doesn't matter who is in Rumsfeld's position, that it will still be doing the same things and following the same agenda, but all it does is give us a false sense of security and sort of create an imbalance in people's opinion that they don't have a figurehead to hate with regard to the war in Iraq, and so it creates kind of a new face, a new picture on the war in Iraq, and there's a little bit of subtle politicking in there.
And of course, everybody's going to be expected. We're going to get out of Iraq. Everything's going to be fine. Our boys are going to come home. They don't understand. It's all a game. You're being manipulated. I don't believe anything is going to change. I agree with Andrew. They're completely. This is all a showbiz. Go ahead.
No, that's exactly right. And on that note, it's important to remember that we can't just blindly support our troops in Iraq. It's important to remember that our troops are not defending our rights or our country. They're occupying.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, we're out of time, Andrew, but why don't you go ahead and just make your final thought. Andrew was saying you can't blindly support the troops in Iraq. They're not defending America. They're being sent over there by the internationalists as a diversion so the American people will not see that we're losing our freedom here at home.
That's right.
And they're passing new legislation, whether it be the Military Commission Act or the Patriot Act or the Office of Home Security Act or this latest John Warner Act, which is really so terribly, terribly dangerous. We have to understand that freedom is at stake. And the war in Iraq is a diversion. When you understand that, then you can understand why we have no intention of winning the war. To sum up, you got 1 minute to wrap up the program, Andrew.
Okay, thanks. I don't have a Support Our Troops yellow sticker on my car because not that I am personally against our troops themselves, but our troops are ignorant, by and large, of the hidden globalist political agenda that is being pursued by our leaders. And unfortunately, military personnel and their families are too willing to hide behind the patriotic slogans while refusing to open their eyes for evidence of government manipulation and deception, which is using the American patriotic instincts of supporting our troops to further their globalist agenda of warmongering in situations like Iraq.
Well said. God bless you. Thanks very much for being with us, Andrew Skousen.
My pleasure, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye. God bless. Okay, fine. Well, that was Andrew Skousen. Hope you enjoyed the program. And I think it's so important people understand that nothing is as it appears to be. Everything is being contrived. And the last thing they want is the American people to understand that we're sending our boys overseas to fight for freedom while we're losing our freedom here at home. Well, we do hope that many of you out there will want to get our material on Vietnam, because if you don't understand Vietnam, you can't understand what's going on in America today. Our telephone number, if you'd like to get the Vietnam the 4-tape set, or better still, the Vietnam special, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Actually, we have copies now of these long, out-of-print books. These are used books, but they're in good shape, at least the initial ones you'll get. Kiss the Boys Goodbye by Monica Jensen Stevenson. and Spite House by Monica Jensen Stevenson. Both of these books were actively suppressed by the intelligence agencies because they do not want the American people to know. In the first book, about the CIA involvement with drugs. In the second book, about the assassination squads that were sent out by the military to kill American citizens. So if you'd like to get the books, either Spite House or Kiss the Boys Goodbye, why give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, and of course they, Mary won't know about them, but just have them call through and we'll get back to you in touch, of course, if you want to get them, along with the tape set that goes with that. The tape set that goes with the first four tape set was The Men We Left Behind. That would be Kiss the Boys Goodbye and The Men We Left Behind tape set. The second one would be Spite House and One Man Returned, the story of Bobby Garwood. And in both of those you have interviews with Monica Jensen Stevenson's books long out of suppressed. The first ones were destroyed by the publisher initially, and when the book was reprinted, 5,000 copies were just accidentally shredded. The second book was forced to be recalled from publication by lawsuits. We have the books. They're available through Radio Liberty. If you want to get them, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. You have to understand Vietnam to understand what's going on in Iraq today. And certainly, our boys, brave men, are over there fighting. Many of them really do believe in America, but they do not understand they're being betrayed by the internationalists who control our government. If you want to understand them, you need to read my August and September newsletters, available at our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Or, if you do not have access to the Internet, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We'll send you a free copy. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.
Tuned to